In the animated series The Simpsons, there is an episode entitled I'm Going to Praiseland. And it opens with an ice cream festival at the Springfield Church. Character Lisa is reading the list of all the ice cream flavors. Wow, she says, look at all these flavors. Blessed Virgin Berry. Commandment. Bible gum. And then the Reverend Lovejoy hands her a bowl and says, or if you prefer, we also have Unitarian ice cream. Lisa peers into the bowl. There's nothing here. And Reverend Lovejoy, crossing his arms, says, exactly. But today I argue that because our identity is rooted in universalism, our identity is far more certain than this vacuous Unitarianism. Universalism draws the circle wide to include all flavors. Universalism upholds that universal idea of metta that the Buddhists value, or agape, which the Christians value. We are all in this world together, so we might as well act like it, is one of the ideas of universalism. We are all related, all of us, even the coyotes and the eagles. We are all worthy. We all deserve to be treated with dignity. Now, we must identify with one another. Now, our individualist society will resist this. Individualism lures us into thinking of our identity as just ours, or as something that you could put on, like a hat, or take off, or like Los Angeles Rams face paint, right? You can put it on for a while, identify, and then just wash it off. Now, I was in St. Louis when the Rams left Missouri and came back to California, so I know all about this, right? Taking it off, put it back on. Issues of identity shape our lives. The rising tide of identity politics has taught us, some of us, to proclaim that Black lives matter because a particular identity can strengthen us, can make us proud, or it can tear us down, it can kill us. Those who identify as Muslim in this country, or trans, or non-binary, or persons of color, or legally undocumented, they all know, all of us know that we can be targeted merely for being who we are. There are increasingly large numbers of people who refuse to identify with any particular religious group, saying that they have their own individual spirituality. We can be ourselves, choose to be what we are, but the fact is we can never simply choose our identity. From the binary of gender to the boxes of race to the slots of political opinion, we are given categories and identities, and we want to shake them off. We may want to try to shake them off, but something significant happens when you choose to accept an identity, to identify with other people, to be identified with a particular group. When you do this, the vast universal becomes particular and tangible in the details of your particular life and the people with whom you share life. It's not enough to talk about the environment and all the biosphere. One has to say, what does it mean to live here? In this Mediterranean-like desert. As a child, I had no cultural identity. In recent decades, I've learned that having no identity is part of having the white majority identity. But I didn't know that as a child. I didn't identify with anyone. I didn't know that I was related to people in Canada and England, and Czechoslovakia, but those all seemed like very distant places and distant people. I also knew that I had like 20 cousins in Ohio, but that still seemed like a really distant foreign place. My father had been raised Catholic, and he took us to Mass on occasions, several times. But no one ever said we were Catholic, or even that we were Christian. Eventually, my mom got involved with the Unitarian Universalists. She invited me to come and to be involved. I fell in love with it immediately. I remember the week that I spent in Ghost Ranch, living, sleeping, eating, playing with Unitarian Universalists, teenagers and others of all ages, and I knew I had found my people. My people. Now, during seminary, that understanding of my people deepened. I was a member of a congregation that was called First Universalist Church. And about 10 years later, I served a congregation in Muncie, Indiana, Unitarian Universalist Church, but it had been founded originally as the First Universalist Church of Muncie. And on a Memorial Day, we went to the graveyard, oldest city graveyard, and we took roses and we placed them on the gravestones of all the founders of that congregation and said, "You still live as long as we remember you, for you are a part of us." And after that ritual, I was walking back to my car, and I saw a little line of stones, all exactly the same, had little floral borders, and I noticed the name Thomas Kirby. Of course, the Thomas stood out for me. I always noticed Thomas, right? And then, but what was really significant, what really caught my eye, was under his name and under his dates was a block lettering, clear capital block lettering, Universalist. It was amazing. He wasn't one of the founders, but he was one of the first ministers of that congregation. And suddenly to be linked directly to someone who had lived 100 years before I was born. And to think that the one thing he wanted people to know about who he was, about his whole life, was that he was a Universalist. It was thrilling. And I thought, what would I put on my stone? Would Unitarian Universalist even fit? And would anyone know what it meant? One of the problems with the name Unitarian Universalist is as one of our children's books says, it's a very long name. It's got 10 syllables. So we often abbreviate it. I abbreviate it to UU, but a lot of people simplify it to the more familiar Unitarian, a noun, dropping out Universalism altogether. Now you may know, and I want you to know, that in America, the Universalists were here first. They started holding general conventions in 1778, while the Unitarians did not form even a loose association until almost 50 years later in 1825. And then in 1961, when the two bodies came together, there was some argument and some anxiety. One of the key arguments was about the name and which one name was going to come first. Now, this anxiety about the name was just not about ego. There was some anxiety, there was some fear about the dangers of coming together. It's said that the Universalists, who had become smaller in number, feared they were going to be swallowed up, and the Unitarians feared they were going to get indigestion. So we became Unitarian Universalist Association anyway, free and independent congregations. But I want you to notice the power of punctuation. If I were to say a sentence like, all people love kittens, comma, they're cooking, all people love cooking, comma, kittens, comma, and their families, right? It's one few of my favorite things, but you take the commas out and it becomes, all people like cooking kittens and their family. A warning. I first picked up the title of my sermon, Unitarian as an Adjective, from an article titled Claiming and Reclaiming Universalism by Helen Knox. In particular, she said, the name, as it now stands, lacking a hyphen, proclaims that we are a Unitarian variety of Universalists. It implies that the two strands are not of our tradition are unequal. Universalism is the noun, the identity, while Unitarian is merely an adjective, a qualifying attribute. Furthermore, I want you to know that for the early American Unitarians, the word Unitarian was an adjective. It was an adjective qualifying the word Christian. William Channing, who really through his words and his deeds, and those who were inspired by him really crystallized the Unitarian identity in America. He preferred the word liberal Christian, where liberal meant generous and open-minded and reasonable and progressive. These liberal Christians focused on social progress and developing compassionate character. However, their insistence on the unity of God and thus Jesus as not a co-equal deity caused the more orthodox to name them Unitarian Christians or Unitarian heretics, and they embraced the label. We embraced the label, Unitarian. In the mid-20th century, Unitarians also identified as liberal, calling ourselves liberal religion or liberally religious. But it's essential to understand that liberal is not a religion, it is not an identity, it's an approach to religion. There are liberal Baptists. I have had many liberal Baptist friends, liberal Catholics, liberal Presbyterians. There are liberal Muslims. There are liberal Hindus, liberal pagans. I know these people, they are my allies, but I don't identify with them exactly the same way. Liberal is not an identity, but it's an orientation. And because we used the word liberal so consistently, by the late 1970s, one out of all 10 children who were raised in Unitarian Universalist churches did not identify with a Unitarian Universalist congregation. They were very liberal, they were very active in the world, they were very progressive, but they did not remain in a congregation because they had no identification with UUs. The word universalist. The universalist gives an anchor to the identity beneath liberalism. Now, with a small u, it implies the idea that what is true and good in my religion is found in all other religions, that there are universal truths. But with a capital U, universalism connotes the Christian idea that not some people, but every single person on the earth are beneficiaries of God's love, of God's restoration power, of God's salvation power. It refers to those people who respond to this idea of universal love by trying to live in this world as it is in heaven, a place of inclusion, a place of radical inclusion. It means loving everyone. Even the people you don't get along with very well. Even the people who irritate and trouble you. But it also especially means embracing the outcast, embracing those on the margins. It means resisting laws and systems that are designed to make people illegal simply for being who they are. Universalism moves us. That love, that sense that there is an all-embracing love, it moves us to do more than just accept that people are different. It insists that everyone deserves respect and dignity. Dignity is about inclusion, how you participate in society, being given a voice, being given a vote, being given a place. In this divided, polarized culture, the ideas of universalism are radically countercultural. Running against the grain of everyone for oneself or us against them ideologies, we affirm that we are all in this together. Even the birds, even the insects, we are all in this together, and we must start living like it. Now, in this country, the universalists were massively appealing. Before 1650, the Universalist movement, the Universalist Association, grew to be, they didn't do good number counting, so it's really hard to tell exactly, but it grew to be somewhere between the sixth or seventh largest denomination in the United States. It was the Universalists. By the 1920s, even traditionally Calvinist communions like Presbyterians started to move hell back into the back closet and began to speak more about universal rights and loving one's neighbor than they did about predestination and damnation. And as a result, as universalism began to become dominant attitude within America, the Universalist Association began to fade. Grew smaller in numbers, but really it was growing bigger in numbers because it was spreading out into the general Christian community, and the Universalists began to talk more about social justice and about universal rights, just like the Unitarians. When I was working in Texas, Unitarian Universalist Church, a woman came to me. Her friends, a friend of a friend, was a member of my congregation. She had been experiencing abuse from her husband. And when she had talked to her pastor about it, a Christian pastor, he had told her, he had recited the line from Ephesians, "Woman, submit to your husband." But I already knew enough about the scripture, I could point out, which she already knew too, was that that short little passage about women submit to your husbands is followed by a much longer passage about husbands trying to be really loving to their spouses. She knew that there was something wrong in the way that Christianity was being told to her. And so she came seeking a different understanding, and she had heard about universalism, but she didn't know any universalists, so I was the closest thing she could find, right? And we talked about universalism, and we talked about her life, and I said, certainly if I don't want you to suffer, I don't think God wants you to suffer too. And she went home, and I didn't think I'd see her again. But 2 weeks later, she came back. And she'd been talking to her mother, her elderly mother in a nursing facility. And she said, "Mom, I was thinking about Grandma. Was she a part of a congregation?" And her mom said, "Yes, she was." And I said, "Which one?" She goes, "Oh, she was a part of some Universalist congregation." Her grandmother, the woman who was the most loving, most generous, most positive, most affirming person in her life, was a Universalist. And she woke up. She realized that universal love, that powerful love, had always been there. It had been buried, but it was moving her, and it moved her to change her life. So I'm encouraging you to identify as a universalist, a very specific kind of universalist, for there are many kinds, Christian universalists, all kinds. We are the universalists who are also ethical and reasonable and scientific and somewhat individualistic. We are not merely concerned with creating rules of right and wrong. Unitarians have always been those people who cared about ethics, the principles that were enunciated in the past need to be given not just rules, but need to be lived out, to live by principles rather than right and wrong, to be ethical. And Jesus, seen not as some cosmological source of salvation and some scheme of damnation and retribution, but seen as a primary embodiment of someone who lives by principles, who lives an ethical, deeply loving life. Unitarians have always tried to work out the application of principles in human living. That is why so many have been leaders, presidents, reformers, bringing the Christian Reformation into its fullness in matters of religion and education and everything else. But when I think about universalism, Unitarian Universalism, I still go back to that root, like Marcus Garvey. Marcus Garvey, whose phrase, "one love," invoked the spirit of universalism. Like in that song, the reggae song, "One Love, One Heart," let's get together and feel all right. It's not just about thinking clearly, it's about feeling deeply and suffusing that into one whole circle. I think of the Universalist, Clara Barton, who was caring for men on both sides of the Civil War, who cared for all human beings at a moment when this nation was horribly divided. She embraced with love everyone who needed to be cared for. Unitarian Universalists are those who think carefully, reasonably, and scientifically about how to love everyone and how to bring everyone in. And this fellowship, this community is a unique and inspiring community, but it is a grounding of that movement, that tradition of those who love mightily, who see us all as one people, and then embody that love using reason and science and ethical integrity. We are Unitarian Universalists, a particular kind of all-embracing love.